Look at you, Owen. What is this stripe in your hair? Is it flour? She touched the white spot of hair on the side of his head, and he leaned away from her.
I noticed it, too, the princess said. Just a little tuft of hair. White as snow. I imagine when his hair gets long, you can hardly see it.
Owen himself did not think of it much, but people were always commenting about it. It was just his hair, so what if he had a strange patch in it? The princess touched the cook's arm.
Would it be all right if he stayed here a little while? When I came into the hall, everyone was shouting, and I could tell he was frightened.
The cook shook her head. Shouting in front of such a young man! The height of bad manners! Owen, you may come to my kitchen as often as you like. Your brother was always welcome here. If someone wants to scold you, well, I will scold him first, be it the king himself. Never upset a cook, or even the milk turns sour. You come this way whenever you are scared or lonely, all right, Owen? Will you keep me company now and then?
He smiled, gazing around at the arches and the hanging pots on pegs.
I like it here,
he said shyly, feeling much calmer now that he was distanced from the king's fury. He did not want to meet him again, yet he knew he would have to share breakfast with him every day. The princess knelt down again next to Owen. Her eyes were serious, and she petted him fondly, as if she had always known him.
Leona will help take care of you. I am going to find Master Ratcliffe to help him choose a governess for you.
She stroked his arm.
I will watch out for you, Owen. So will Leona. There are many here still... faithful.
She hesitated before saying the word. Then she straightened. Her dress shimmered with colors in the light, and the beams made her golden hair radiant. She looked like a queen herself.
Thank you,
Owen mumbled, gazing up at her. Leona's nostrils tightened.
The next round of loaves is nearly done. You can always smell them. I will look after the child, princess. Fear not. There are so many here, he won't be underfoot.
She gave Owen a look of intrigue.
My husband is the woodcutter of the castle, she said mysteriously. He knows all the best haunts to wander and wouldn't mind a companion on his journeys around the hill. He decides which of the king's trees to keep and which he will cut and make into firewood. He's off tromping in the woods right now, or you'd find him here with a flagon of ale and his feet up on a barrel. But I keep a tidy kitchen, as you see, so he knows to leave his dusty boots outside. Let me fetch you another honey cake.
She winked again and quickly went over to the clay pot to do just that. Another girl had stepped in to remove the loaves from the oven.
Thank you, Leona, the princess said.
Anything for your highness's family, Leona answered, her look dark and serious.
She hugged Elise again.
Now I must see to finding a suitable governess, the princess said, tousling Owen's hair one last time.
The cook stared wistfully at the princess as she left the kitchen. But as soon as she was gone, her expression changed from wistful to annoyed. Owen's heart sank. Had it all been an act?
And here he comes, Leona said with a huff. It's enough to sour a pudding. There is the king's butler, Master Berwick. He's from the north, Owen. Some men from there are not to be trusted. I pity your lord father. Truly I do. I made my promise, and I will keep it. I'll look after you, lad. You will always have a place here in the kitchen.
She smiled down at him, buoying his spirits. The sound of boots jarred Owen's attention, and then an old, wrinkled, leathery man strode in quickly, wheezing as he approached Leona. He was tall, with a barrel gut and leathery brown skin. He had a bald dome splotched with liver marks, but there was a wreath of thick, curly hair around his ears and neck. He wore the king's livery, black and gold with the boar insignia.
"Look at ye," he said derisively to Leona. "Standing idle at such a time for supper."
Owen had always struggled to understand people with thick northern accents. It was as if they were in too much of a hurry to finish all the syllables in their words.
"When's the quail-egg pie gonna be finished for the master? Aren't you started it yet?"
The look on Leona's face curdled.
Have you not enough to worry about, Berwick, that you must meddle in my kitchen?
I wouldn't meddle if it were run sharp. The master ain't a patient man, nor does he brook laziness.
Are you saying I am lazy?
She asked, her voice hardening.
Do you have any idea how long it takes to feed a palace this size? How many loaves of bread we make in a day?
506,
he said with a sneer, and snapped his fingers at her.
I tally the flour bags, I know the eggs and yolk, I am the king's butler, and managed his castle in the north,
which was much smaller than this one, I might remind you, Berwick.
Owen stared up at the tall butler. He smelled like something strange. Cabbage, perhaps. His stare attracted the attention of the older man.
And whose whelp is this young'un? Another sorry case whose papa won't work?
This is the Duke of Kiskadden's son,
Leona said, pulling Owen against her apron.
He's not a whelp, you rude man, but of noble blood.
The butler looked at Owen in surprise.
Faugh!
He spluttered.
Kiskadden's brat! I pity him, then. His brother ended in a river.
Leona looked cross.
He's the king's ward. That's nothing to be pitied.
The butler snorted.
Ward? I think not. He's the king's hostage. Just had a little chat with Duke Horwath, a mighty fine lord, on his way back to the north. This lad's days are numbered.
Leona's expression hardened, her face turning pale.
You will stop such talk,
she said angrily. She motioned for Owen to go sit on a nearby crate and then walked up to Berwick and started to give him a tongue-lashing in a low voice. Owen sat on the small crate, his joy in finding the kitchen starting to wane. The king's threats roiled his stomach. Even though the kitchen was comfortable, warm, and had that wonderful yeasty smell, he could not keep his eye from that dagger-like spire out the window. It felt as if the king were watching him even here.
No! You watch your words, crone!
Berwick said angrily.
My master may call down a new cook from the north, and then what would you do? But if you mind me and do as I say, all will go well for you.
He gave Owen a dark look and harrumphed, shaking his head as if the boy were already a cold slab of dead fish. Leona's eyes sparked with anger as she returned to him, wiping her fingers vigorously on her apron front. She muttered under her breath for a moment.
I need to get the king's supper ready,
she finally said, her voice pitched low. Owen noticed that she would not look him in the eye.
There used to be more children playing around the castle. When the queen and king ruled, it was different. Men like Berwick would watch their words better.
Her lips were taut.
If Berwick only knew. If he only knew.
She cast a surreptitious glance at the boy, and then dropped her voice very low.
Are you afraid, Owen?
He stared at her and nodded mutely. She hastily walked over to another table and then brought over a bowl with some flour and other ingredients already inside. She cracked an egg with one hand and emptied the yolk into the bowl. She then began kneading the mixture with her strong fingers. Owen felt she wanted to say more, so he waited for her to speak. She glanced around the kitchen again, making sure no one else was nearby.
My husband and I walk the grounds often,
she said softly, almost in a whisper.
He knows it best. There is a porter door that is always unlocked. Always.
She glanced around again, and when she continued, her voice was even softer.
Owen, your parents did not send you here to be killed. You have friends, like the princess, like me. The princess's mother is in sanctuary at Our Lady. She has been there for the 2 years since her husband's brother seized the throne. Mayhap she would help you, Owen. Do you know where the sanctuary is?
Owen stared at her, his heart pounding fast.
We passed it. On the way here.
You did,
she said, kneading the dough as if she were trying to strangle Berwick.
If you go to that sanctuary,
Not even the king can make you come out.
You would be safe there.
She glanced back at the crowded kitchen, her eyes darting around worriedly.
If you are a brave little boy.
A little spark of hope lit in his chest.
I'm brave,
he whispered softly, gazing hard at her. But as he looked up at her, he saw the knife-like spire through the window again.
I am a foreigner to Ceredigion, so I found the political intrigues and bad blood to be almost incomprehensible at first. Let me summarize it thus. The ruling houses of this kingdom can be likened to members of a large family who hate each other fiercely. The grievances go back to the founding of this dynasty, nigh on 3 centuries ago. These family members make an art out of warring with each other. King Severn's enemies are all in their graves. Or should I say all his male enemies are? He is still estranged from the Queen Dowager, his brother's wife, who continues to plot against him from the sanctuary of Our Lady. But in my assessment, her power and her once great beauty are now waning. My bets are on the crouch-backed king. Rumor has it he fancies his niece, Princess Elise. It's a sordid rumor embellished by the Queen Dowager. Pay it no heed.
Dominique Mancini, espion of Our Lady of King Fountain. Chapter 5. Ghosts. They had assigned Owen to his brother's vacant room, and he found he could not sleep at all. Everything about it, even the smell, was strange and unsettling. He had always been very sensitive to sounds, especially unfamiliar ones, and the palace was full of sounds. Creaking timbers, the tapping of boots on stone, the distant murmur of voices, the rattle of keys in locks. There was always some commotion outside his door. So Owen sat up on his small wooden pallet and pulled the curtains wide, letting the moon shine through the window. And as he sat and stared at the moon, he tried to calm the frantic beating of his heart and quell the dreadful homesickness that festered there. That night, he made several decisions, and he made a promise to the moon. He knew the world of adults was very different from his own. For reasons he did not comprehend, his parents had abandoned him. He had the vague sense that they'd been forced to offer up one of their children, and they had chosen him. In the dark, he wrestled with the feelings that accompanied that realization. He shed more tears, but the tears weren't sad. They weren't angry. They were disappointed. When the tears were finally spent, he ground his teeth and dealt with the harsh truth that his parents were not going to save him. He had the intuition that if he stayed at the castle and did nothing to save himself, he would probably not survive. So, he had to figure out a way to change the end of the story and not end up in the river. Being the youngest in the family, Owen had learned some simple truths in his short life. Because he was the youngest and the smallest in Tatton Hall, the adults around him thought he was weak and could not do things for himself. They always offered to help him, which annoyed Owen and made him even more determined to prove he was capable. He hated it when his suggestions and ideas were not taken seriously, especially when one of his little speeches caused his parents or older siblings to laugh at him. Owen had learned that there was a certain power in being the youngest. He was a strong-willed little boy who'd learned the power of tantrums in getting his way. He used this tactic judiciously, of course, for he was normally soft-spoken and gentle. It also did not escape Owen's notice that adults fawned over him, especially his sisters. He had learned that being adorable, affectionate, and quick to give hugs and smiles and little kisses earned him treats and stories and attention. By being quiet, especially at night, he could stay up longer because they would forget he was there. Power. There was power in being able to control how others reacted to you. That reminded Owen of his favorite pastime, the one that he could spend hours and hours doing. placing little tiles in a line and then knocking them down. He had seen one of his siblings do this once. Maybe Owen had been a baby and the falling tiles had made him giggle. It was one of his earliest memories. Soon he was the one stacking the tiles, and he learned there was an immense thrill in using one tile to topple many. As he grew older, his stacking became more and more elaborate. The lines became crooked. Sometimes he used other objects as barriers and changed the height of the structures he prepared. Sometimes he'd build towers out of his tiles and trigger them to collapse. Nothing made him more intensely furious than when someone knocked down his tiles accidentally, or purposefully. He even raged at himself when he did it. Stacking the tiles, placing them in exactly the formation he envisioned, helped him sort through his troubles. Owen made two decisions that night. The first he told to the Silver Moon.
"I will escape from here," he vowed.
No matter what his parents did or did not do, he would not give up until he had found a way to flee the king who filled him with such terror. He did not want to join the ghosts of this castle. His second decision was to make his stay at the castle bearable until he figured out a way to escape. For that, he needed a box of tiles. Out of all the places he had seen so far, the kitchen was the place he liked the most. It was bright and cheerful. Leona was just the sort of woman he knew would help him. He would ask her for some tiles and for permission to stack them in a corner of the kitchen. He was so excited to begin that he waited restlessly until the moon faded from the windowpane and the sky began to brighten. Cooks were in the kitchen early. If Owen was to have breakfast with the king, he wanted to at least have something to look forward to after. Still wearing the rumpled clothes in which he'd arrived, Owen made it back to the kitchen on his own, stealing away soundlessly between shadows. He found the way quite easily, his nose drawing him there as much as his memory of the way. It was still early, and the only two people in the kitchen were Leona and a man he assumed was her husband.
"Look at you here before the cock crows," Leona said cheerfully. "The fountain bless you, lad. Are you hungry already?"
Owen looked at the man, suddenly overwhelmed by nervousness. Strangers always did that to him. He was furious at himself when his tongue refused to unknot enough for him to speak. The man had reddish hair and a beard with flecks of gray in it. He wore leathers stained in tree sap, and a gleaming woodsman's axe hung from a hoop in his belt. Leona noticed his hesitation and patted the man's shoulder.
"Drew, this is Owen. I told you of him."
The woodsman turned to look at Owen with a shy smile and a twinkle in his eye. He nodded and then crouched down on the tiled floor.
"You are the Duke's son," he said in a cheery, soft-spoken manner. "I can see the blood is true. You look like your brothers. My name is Andrew, but folk just call me Drew. Good morning, Owen."
Owen wanted to return the greeting. The man was friendly and easygoing, but Owen could still not bring himself to speak.
"Tend to the fire, Drew," Leona said, briskly warming her hands. "Owen, you will be supping with the king this morning, so I best not ruin your appetite, but no one walks out of my kitchen hungry. There is bread from yesterday."
Owen grinned at her, grateful to have found this ally. He quietly retreated to a bench to watch her fix him a little plate as Drew coaxed the ashes back to life. Owen had seen men do this before, and it fascinated him how a heap of gray ashes, if blown on consistently, could catch fire anew. He stared at Drew as he puffed away and was thrilled when the crackling sound of the reviving fire met his ears. He wanted to learn how to do that. He thought he could, but he would come back the next day and keep watching to be sure. Then he would try it himself. Leona tousled his hair after giving him the plate. He ate hungrily, watching as servants began to arrive to prepare the morning meal.
"Leona?"
he asked in a small voice. Too small, she had not heard him.
"The lad is calling you,"
Drew said gently, rising from the ovens. Leona had dough on her fingers when she approached him.
"What is it?"
Owen licked his lips, grateful that Drew had noticed his need. Though he was still nearly tongue-tied with shyness, he was determined to get his tiles.
Is there a box of tiles?
He asked, looking into her eyes imploringly.
That I could play with?
She looked at him confused.
Tiles?
Like these,
he said, tapping his shoe against the floor.
Small ones. Like these. I like to play with them.
Drew gave him a strange look, then said,
I believe there is.
Leona needed to deliver instructions to the kitchen help, so she asked her husband to fetch them. Shortly thereafter, he returned with a wooden box that held a substantial number of tiles. Some were chipped and damaged, and there were many different sizes and colors. Owen's eyes widened with delight when Drew handed him the box.
I'm on my way to the woods,
he said in his kind voice.
Maybe you'd care to join me later, and I can show you the grounds.
Owen looked up at him and nodded vigorously. Still, his tongue would not loosen. He wanted to thank Drew for the tiles, but a familiar choking feeling had stolen his ability to speak. He gazed down at the box in his lap, trying to force the words to come. The best he could do was to bob his head up and down once. Drew smiled at him and walked away. Owen clenched his fists for a moment, angry at himself for not speaking. But the wonderful box on his lap was too enticing for him to continue his fit. He abandoned what remained of his plate of food and took the box over to a corner of the kitchen where no one was bustling. He quickly sorted the tiles by size and shape and color, and then began placing them in a row. As soon as the first one went into position, his mind took off as if it were an arrow launched from a bow. The process of taking out the pieces and putting them down was so familiar it was automatic, and he was almost blind to the pattern he was making on the floor. In his mind, he sorted through the details of what he had learned since leaving his family. The different people he had met began to come together in his mind. And as he did, he realized he had feelings about each one. The king, he feared. Duke Horwath, he respected. Ratcliffe, he despised. Princess Elise, he adored. Leona and Drew would be like his new parents. Berwick was annoying. Owen had heard a great many things spoken, and some of them he did not understand. What he did understand was that the king would kill him if his parents did not prove they were loyal. Every day he stayed in King Fountain would only increase the danger. If he made it to the sanctuary of Our Lady, the king's sister-in-law might be able to protect him. She was Princess Elise's mother and had been queen up until 2 years ago when King Severn had stolen the throne from his brother's heirs. The princes were dead. Owen risked sharing their fate. The solution seemed obvious. He needed to find a way to escape the palace and make it to Our Lady without being caught by the king's men. But how could he arrange that? What would he need to do? He needed to know the grounds. Drew knew the grounds. Drew had even offered to take him for a walk. Owen set the last tile on the floor. He was sitting amidst a twisting spiral of tiles, which started at his knees and wound farther and farther around him, loop after loop. How many tiles had he placed? 100? He did not remember. Owen noticed that the kitchen was unusually quiet. He looked over his shoulder and saw Leona and the others staring at him, mesmerized by what he had done. He gave Leona a small smile and then tipped over the tile nearest his knee. The cook startled as the tiles fell, clinking softly and rapidly as they raced around the circles. It only took a few moments for the last one to fall.
Well, Leona said with surprise, I'll be blessed. That is the most curious thing I've seen a lad do.
Owen flushed at the praise, feeling the pressure of the gazes of the kitchen helpers. And just at that moment, a frantic young woman came rushing into the kitchen, her long dark hair trailing as she ran.
Has anyone seen a little boy? The Duke's son. He's missing. Has anyone?
She was gasping, almost out of breath, but she heaved a sigh of relief as a few fingers pointed his way. She was Mona Sterling, his young governess he had met the previous evening.
"There you are! Owen, the king's breakfast! Hasten!"
The words seemed to remind everyone of their duties. Leona started to call out orders, and the servants hurried pell-mell around the kitchen. Owen had quickly started to gather the tiles into the box, but Mona seized his hand and tugged him away before he could finish, leading him back to his room in the tower.
"There is no time. You must be dressed and ready. Come with me. Lord Ratcliffe is furious."
"There is a great fear of poisoners in any kingdom, but especially in this one. Think what it must do to the constitution of a man to live in constant fear that his next sip or mouthful of food may be his very last. The king's brother died suddenly, to the surprise of all. Granted, I was told his revels of feasting were quite out of control, and his consumption of food and drink gluttonous. I would have enjoyed serving him immensely. But the very suddenness of his death does incline one to suspect the use of poison. The question is, who would poison a king?"
"Dominique Mancini, espion of Our Lady of King Fountain." Chapter 6. Dickon Ratcliffe. Mona Sterling was not gentle as she helped Owen change into a new suit of clothes. She licked a napkin and roughly scrubbed a smear from his cheek, then stepped back to examine him.
"There is no time for a bath, but you will get one later today. What were you doing in the kitchen?"
He stared at her without speaking. His stomach was suddenly upset at the thought of meeting Ratcliffe again. And the king. He did not want to breakfast with the king. Mona mussed her fingers through his thatch of mouse-brown hair and frowned.
"Your hair is absolutely wild. What is this pale spot?"
She tried to examine the tuft of white hair, but he shrugged away from her.
"None of that, you little brat," she scolded.
Then, snatching his hand, she dragged him down the corridor from his room and back toward the great hall. The castle was teeming with servants now, men and women holding pitchers, vases filled with fresh-cut flowers, rolled rush matting carpets, urns, and silver dishes. The torches along the corridor hissed at Owen as they passed them, casting long and pointed shadows on the floor. When they reached the great hall, Ratcliffe was pacing, his face furrowed into a sharp frown of disapproval, but he looked relieved as soon as he caught sight of Owen.
"There he is," Ratcliffe said with exasperated relief. "Thought you had snuck out of the castle, lad."
He tugged at his fancy collar.
"I'd rather prefer a swim at the baths or the beach, not down a waterfall."
"But I do plan to sneak out of the castle," Owen thought firmly, gazing up at the tall man as he continued to pace. Owen looked over the trestle tables that had been set up in the hall. They were loaded with trays of food, loaves of golden, sweet-smelling bread, tray after tray of smoked salmon, and a variety of pungent cheeses. A tangled skein of grapes was nestled in a silver dish. Owen noticed that there were no chairs around, and also that he was not the only guest. Most were young folk, many were children, and all were part of the king's court. Were they hostages like he was? He didn't know any of them and wasn't sure what to expect. Servants were busying themselves all around him.
"He was in the kitchen," Mona explained wearily. "I found him." "See, you do not lose him again," Ratcliffe scolded.
He rubbed his hands together, searching the faces of those assembled. He gave Owen a pointed look.
"Be you on time," he said with an angry frown. "The king is a busy man and must not be kept waiting for fools. Are you a fool, little Lord Kiskadden,
Owen shook his head but did not speak.
"See that you are not." "Ah, the king."
Owen's stomach wrenched with fear, and he felt a little dizzy. In a moment, one of the side doors opened, and the king entered, arm in arm with Princess Elise, clearly in the midst of a conversation.
"No, it would not be proper,"
the king said in a disapproving tone.
You are a princess of the realm. He is only the son of a duke. You are cousins in some degree, but I will not have you looking after my hostages.
The king's gaze swept across the young people assembled in the room, not coming to a rest until it reached Owen.
The lost has been found, then?
He asked with a twist to his lip. Ratcliffe looked shaken.
My lord,
he said with a shaky voice.
Where was he, Lady Sterling?
Playing in the kitchen, Mona said anxiously, blushing fiercely and curtsying. The king patted Elise's arm.
You see? The boy is hale. You worried in vain.
Then he turned his gaze on Owen, his eyes smoldering with anger.
You gave my niece concern, lad. She fretted for you.
Uncle, it is no matter, the girl said, touching the bent arm hooked with hers like a shepherd's staff. I was only offering to help look after him. It would not be a burden, truly. The king kept his gaze on Owen. Fear bloomed in the boy's stomach and traveled down through his legs, which felt weak.
You are no nursemaid, Elise,
he said softly. What am I then? She asked him meaningfully. I am not a princess either. I am a bit of fluff blown about by the wind. Your guests are hungry, my lord. She gave him a subtle nudge. The king bowed graciously to her and then gestured that they had his permission to start eating. Owen slowly approached one of the trestle tables, his eyes never leaving the king and the princess. He was curious what would happen, and since Leona had given him something to eat already, he wasn't hungry. As the young people began chatting amongst themselves, some taking slices of bread or a bit of cheese from the table, they ate nervously, anxiously. Some barely finished more than a bite or two. What Owen noticed next surprised him. The king roamed among the guests, watching their faces as they plucked from the tables of food. He watched them chew their food, occasionally reaching out to take something from a tray that had already been touched. The king was watching the others eat before eating himself. Was that normal for a king? Surely it was his right to save all the best food for himself. Owen's mind seemed to roll over like a wagon wheel. He did not understand the king at all. After a few moments, the king poured himself a cup from a pitcher of watery wine. He walked slowly through the gathering, observing his guests with cunning eyes, as if enjoying a private joke. The king noticed Owen was staring at him and began edging his way toward him. Instinctively, Owen began to retreat, trying to keep space between them. Their eyes locked. The king's eyes were gray with flecks of blue, his cheeks still glistened from his morning shave, and his long black hair was tidy and smooth and fell about his shoulders. He had a sharp nose, angled cheeks, and looked bemused. Owen stepped around the trestle table, keeping it between them. His heartbeat thundered in his ears. The king was not wearing the velvet cap he'd had on the previous day, a small detail, and Owen didn't know why it stood out to him. Severn continued his approach, almost slithering like a serpent, his fine, gleaming golden chain winking in the torchlight. Ratcliffe approached the king's shoulder and coughed into his fist.
My lord, a word with you. What is it?
The king asked gruffly, not taking his eyes off Owen.
How did you know the boy was missing? Did one of the Espeon tell you? It was not something you needed to worry about, my lord.
The king broke Owen's gaze to look scornfully at Ratcliffe.
Should I have been worried about it? The castle is a maze of corridors and towers. It's no surprise the boy was lost. What surprised me was that he wasn't better watched after.
Ratcliffe flushed with anger.
You would prefer for him to sleep in my chambers so that I might gaze upon him every moment of the day? No, Dickon. I want you to keep your eye on the lad, like I asked. I'm trusting you in this. Do not disappoint me.
Ratcliffe frowned, nodded once, and walked away. The king turned back to Owen, their gazes meeting once more. Owen found he could not look away. The king limped slightly as he approached the table and rested his hand on the tablecloth.
"You haven't eaten."
Owen shook his head slowly. Unable to loosen his tongue, he quaked with dread. The king took a heel of bread and pushed it toward him. He nodded slowly to the boy and then turned to face someone else. A young man, probably 12 years old, who was talking with a hunk of bread in his mouth. The king's tone was sharp as he addressed the lad.
"Eat it, Dunsworth. Don't choke on it."
The boy went crimson with mortification. He tried to chew faster so he could clear his mouth to reply, and the exaggerated motion caused a few titters from bystanders. The king gave the young man a vicious look. Then he turned his gaze on a girl of about 10.
"Good morrow, Lady Kate. Your eyes are puffy. Were you weeping already?"
"No, my lord," the girl stammered fearfully. "My eyes were itchy, 'tis all."
"Itchy?"
the king replied with a chuckle.
"It's probably the smoke. This is a smoky hall,"
he said, his eyes roaming the rafters.
"Some fresh air will do you well. Try not to wheeze."
Owen watched as the king prowled around the hall, choosing victim after victim. Age did not spare anyone from his barbed wit. His words were feints and thrusts, always sharp and always ready to draw blood. This was what Owen had to look forward to every day, to be wheedled and teased by a sarcastic king who used children as his royal food tasters. He felt a soft hand on his shoulder. Turning his head, he saw Princess Elise standing just beside him. As soon as he noticed her, she dropped her hand and chose a cube of cheese and plopped it into her mouth.
"So you went to the kitchen this morning," she whispered, giving him a private glance.
Though she stood next to him, her body was angled to face the table as if she were only there for the food. Owen nodded, mesmerized by her presence. It was not just the beauty of her golden hair and hazel eyes. She had a peace about her, a gentleness that seemed totally devoid of any pretense. It was a look that invited Owen's trust.
"You will be safe there," she whispered. "Leona is loyal to my mother. I asked the king if I could be your guardian, but he refused. He thinks it's beneath my dignity."
She frowned slightly.
"I had 2 little brothers. You see,"
she said, her voice suddenly thick,
"you remind me of one of them. He would have been 12.
Her fingers gently mussed his hair.
"I will see you when I can, Owen, but it will not be often. Have courage."
Then she stepped away from him to talk to a set of younger girls, admiring their dresses and their hair. Owen felt a knot of pain in his heart. He wanted to escape. He needed to find a way out. But first, he would need to know the grounds. The palace of King Fountain was built on a wooded hill alongside the mighty river and near the impressive waterfall. From the outside, it seemed massive, all thick walls and pointed turrets. But Owen quickly realized that it was hollow in the middle. The walls were steep and tall and enclosed an interior garden area with trees and walkways and interesting paths. One could walk around the main corridor of the castle in a giant loop, which made it seem like a never-ending fortress. But once Owen had walked it a few times with Mona Sterling, he began to learn the tricks of the place. It was after a walk with Drew that he learned about the exterior grounds. Because it was built on a hill, there was also a lower level, another series of walls and bulwarks to defend from invaders, and even lower down, a third portion that interlocked with the second set of walls. From one of the tower windows, he could see the different layers, all the way down to the horse masters breaking new stallions in the stables far below. There were yards with the royal coaches. There were towers everywhere, including the knife-like one that had caught his eye the first day. It would take weeks for Owen to visit every hall, explore every staircase, and gaze at every tapestry. But he had an eye for details, and he quickly made little checkpoints for himself, like the suit of armor holding a poleaxe that led to a gallery of paintings, or the iron-railed fountain that led to the sanctuary within the palace where he could hear the sound of lapping waters. Mona was not used to the exercise of being dragged around the palace, and when he finally returned to the kitchen later to rest and find something sweet to eat, she plopped down on a stool and started complaining to the helpers about how Owen had dragged her tirelessly 6 times around the castle. He looked for his box of tiles, but could not find them anywhere. Divining his intent, Leona motioned to a worn leather satchel with a single strap and buckles. "The tiles are over there," she said kindly. "Drew brought it for you to keep the box of tiles safe. He thought you might want to carry it about. Is it too heavy for you?" Owen went over and hefted the strap. The satchel was heavy, but he was determined. He grinned at her and shook his head. "Everyone keeps talking about you and your little tiles and asking where they are. I keep saying, 'Over there in Owen's satchel.'" And that was how the boy from Tatton Hall earned his nickname, Owen Satchel. The next morning, when he came to the kitchen to play with his tiles, he found the box next to the open satchel. Leona had not yet arrived, and he was alone. Some of the tiles were littering the floor next to the box. Upon closer inspection, he realized they had been arranged to form little blocky letters. O-W-E-N. It was probably Drew. A little message from a friend. He smiled and then put it out of his mind as he began to build.
King Eridor, of blessed memory, experienced all the vicissitudes of kingship. He won the crown, he lost the crown, he won it back. The story is worthy of the epics of any age. Few have studied his reign as closely as I have, and I know that Eridor would not have regained his crown if not for his brother. Not Severn, who was always loyal, but the treacherous Earl of Dunsworth. The brother who betrayed him and then repented. The truce following Eridor's victory was uneasy. After all, Dunsworth's claim to the crown was what had made him defect in the first place. There is much secrecy and suspicion about how the Earl met his fate. Some say he was poisoned, some say he was drowned in a keg of wine. No one knows the truth. What we do know is this. He was declared a traitor. His titles and lands were forfeit, but they have been promised to his son when he comes of age. I am certain Eridor had his brother put to death in some fashion or other, for I saw the corpse. And his only son, the new Lord Dunsworth, is very much turning into the man his father was. He is a spiteful little braggart, and I detest him. The lad is only 12, and the castle staff live in terror of him.
Dominique Mancini, Espion of Our Lady of King Fountain. Chapter 7. Dunsworth's Heir. In the 2 weeks that Owen had lived in the palace, his days had come to follow a routine. He would rise early in the morning and rush to the kitchen with his satchel to begin laying down tiles in intricate new arrangements. Sometimes there would already be a design waiting for him, a few tiles arranged into a tower or a wall, but he never got there early enough to catch Drew doing it. Each morning a meal would be shared with the king and the other children of the realm, full of sarcastic barbs and jests as the king wandered amongst his guests, looking for provocation for a taunt. Then Owen would wander the castle and the grounds with Mona Sterling, who would complain incessantly until he found a tree or wall he wanted to climb, giving her the opportunity to rest. In the afternoon, he would sit in the royal library for hours, devouring the books Mona gave him to read so she could gossip with her friends. Once she mentioned a baker from Paizan who was discovered to be fountain-blessed. When he baked bread, the loaves seemed to magically multiply. The king of Paizan had learned about him and had the baker seized to serve in the palace kitchen. They spent a long time talking about the rare individuals whom the fountain had gifted with extraordinary magic. Owen perked up and listened, for he loved reading about the Fountain Blessed. When he came across such a tale in a book, he would slow down and savor it. There were stories about knights who could not be defeated in battle, sorceresses who wore helmets instead of headdresses and could summon rain and magic down on their enemies. The magic could manifest in so many different ways. Unfortunately, the stories rarely included enough detail. Even the gossip about the baker boy revealed nothing about how the magic happened. Owen always spent the final hours of his day back in the kitchen. He was the first one there and the last to leave, and while he lived in a state of fear, he knew that he could find some measure of comfort and calm in that one sacred place. Until Dunsdorth found out. Owen was lost inside himself, ignoring the bustle of the kitchen as the cauldrons were scrubbed clean, the floors were swept, except where he knelt and arranged tiles, and dough was left to rise in bowls during the night. He heard none of the commotion, yet the commotion was part of the haze that made the kitchen so comfortable. He could not stand absolute silence, where every rattling lock or clomping bootstep could mean disaster. The noises of the kitchen, particularly Leona's soothing voice and the orders she gave, helped create enough of a lull for him to concentrate on his tile stacking. He knelt along the fringe, carefully building another section, when suddenly the entire thing came crashing down around him, startling him. Owen rarely triggered a collapse himself anymore. He sat up, watching as the hours of work vanished in seconds, and then heard the sniggering chuckle behind him. He turned, his face turning white with rage when he saw Dunsdorth standing behind him, arms folded, his boot clearly the offender.
"Aw, poor lad," Dunsdorth soothed with a wicked smile. "You should be more careful with your toys."
A blistering pain of fury exploded in Owen's skull. He began to shake with rage as he stared at the older boy with undisguised loathing. Dunsdorth was 12 or 13, and he was not a small lad. He was easily a head or two taller than Owen, and even had muscles beneath his tailored doublet. A dagger sheath hung from his belt. He made it no secret that he longed to wear a sword as the adults did. The look he gave Owen was provoking, as if he wanted the young boy to rush at him with fists drawn so he could enjoy knocking him down. His sneer seemed to say, "Well, what are you going to do about this?" With shaking hands, Owen stared at the devastation around him, at the ruins of his work, and he could barely think from the rage squeezing his heart. But he knew, instinctively, that Dunsdorth could overpower him.
"What? You say nothing," the older boy scoffed. Then he lowered his tone. "You waste your time here, little Kiski. You should be in the training yard with me, earning some bruises that will make you into a man. Your father must be ashamed of you. Quit playing with toys. What, are you going to cry? Shall I fetch a wet nurse to dry your eyes?"
Owen turned away, humiliated, and began to stack the tiles back into the box with trembling fingers. He would not try setting them up again. It was too late in the day for that. But he could not bear the antagonizing look on Dunsdorth's face. And yes, he was afraid he would start crying. Owen started again when the heel of Dunsdorth's boot came down on some of the tiles and crushed them. The sound, so out of place in the kitchen, made his heart leap with fear. He turned and watched the older boy grinning at him, defying him to say anything. Staring into his eyes, Dunsdorth stomped again and cracked some more.
"Out! Get out of here!"
Leona barked, storming up to the bully with a stern look.
"Get you gone, Lord Dunsdorth, out of my kitchen! Leave that little boy alone!"
Dunsdorth gave the approaching cook a disdainful look and hooked his thumbs in his wide leather belt.
"Poor boy, you mean,"
Dunsdorth said saucily. He ground some more tiles under his heel.
"Playing with bits and scraps like a beggar. I came because I was hungry. Give me a muffin, cook."
I should box your ears, Leona said angrily.
She was a short woman, but Dunsworth was only 12, so they were of a size. Though she looked angry enough to thrash him, the bully looked unconcerned.
You touch me, Dunsworth warned, and I'll have my revenge.
He raised a hand and closed it around the dagger hilt.
Now fetch me a muffin.
Leona scowled at him and huffed to herself, but she grabbed a leftover muffin from a tray and thrust it into his hand. Using the older boy's distraction to his favor, Owen dragged his satchel nearer and furiously started picking up the rest of the fallen pieces before they too could be destroyed. Dunsworth took a bite, thanked Leona rudely with a wad of it in his mouth, and then sauntered out of the kitchen. Owen's mind was black, but the imminent threat of pain was leaving, and his smoldering heart began to cool. Heaving a sigh, Leona knelt by the fallen tiles and helped him collect them.
"I'll ask Drew to find you some more," she offered, touching his hand with her own. "That boy's a rude sort. I hope we did not make an enemy of him today."
Owen frowned and breathed through his nose.
"You should see how the king talks to him," he said. "He's treated the worst of us all."
"True, but that doesn't excuse him to scold and tease smaller children. What sort of life is this?"
She mopped her forehead.
"Always living at risk of the king's wrath."
She stopped gathering tiles, though she remained kneeling by him. Owen looked at her and saw a strange expression in her eyes.
"What is it, Leona?"
"You still wander the grounds with your maid?"
she asked him softly. He nodded, intrigued, as he grabbed another fistful of tiles and stacked them carefully in the box.
"You know the garden with the horse fountains and the hickory trees? It's on the lower ring of walls."
"I do,"
Owen said, gazing into her eyes. The tiles were cold in his hands.
"There is a porter door in the wall," she confided. "An iron door. They never lock it. The king's espion use it to get in and out of the palace without the guards seeing. Drew told me of it. I've not told a soul I know."
She paused and glanced over her shoulder again, licking her lips.
"You cannot tell anyone that I told you, Owen," she said when she finally returned her gaze to him. "I would lose my place. Or worse. There is a trail leading down to the castle road that goes to the bridge to Our Lady." "Get you to sanctuary, Owen."
She reached down and squeezed his knee. It tickled, though he knew that was not intended.
"Seek out the Queen Dowager or her daughter Elise. Sometimes she is there. Even a child can claim sanctuary."
She rose in a hurry and busied herself by the bread ovens, then grabbed a fistful of flour from a sack and spread it on the table nearby. She looked pale and a little nervous and didn't so much as glance at Owen again. Owen was grateful for her help and excited by the possibility of escaping his life in the palace. He had arrived when the moon was half full, and now it was nearly full. If he managed to claim sanctuary, perhaps his parents could come and visit him? He was heartsick and missed them dreadfully. After he finished cleaning up, he slung the satchel around his shoulder and started off to find Mona. It was after dark, so he would have to escape the next day. He had just the idea to slip away from his governess.
"I don't wish to play the seeking game," Mona complained, trudging after Owen down the hill.
"There is a groomsman I want to talk to. Let's visit the stables."
Owen kept a strong pace, and the girl's long skirts made it difficult for her to keep up with him. He was so excited that he had not been hungry all day, but he had still eaten as much as he could and slipped some food in his pockets for later. Worried that his sly thoughts might show in his eyes, Owen had done his best to stay away from the king and Ratcliffe.
"Slow down," Mona said, tromping through a thin hedge.
Owen wove between the shagbark hickories, heading toward the wall.
"Can we not go to the stables, Master Owen? I will get you a treat."
I want to play the seeking game, Owen said firmly.
He could hear the murmuring of the fountain as they came nearer. Soon he could see it, the circular fountain with the huge rearing horse in its midst. Beyond, he spied the porter door, and his heart raced with excitement. He turned and grabbed Mona's hand as she finally caught up to him.
I will hide first. You wait by the fountain and count to 20. No, 50. Then find me.
Mona was breathing hard and came to rest on the fountain's edge. Her dark hair was sticking to her forehead.
I don't want to chase you through the garden, Master Owen. I'm weary. Let me catch my breath.
You won't have to chase me, Owen said, straining with impatience. Once you find me, we'll trade turns. You will hide, and I will find you.
She winced and looked around the park, rubbing her arms.
The park is so big, she said. I don't want to climb any trees. Why do you not wish to visit the stables? You said you liked horses.
No, I didn't, Owen said petulantly. Please, Mona. I used to play the seeking game with my sister.
He gave her a pleading look and a small pout that always worked on his elders. He put his hand on her leg.
You are so like her.
How long must we play this? She asked wearily.
4 turns, Owen said.
She frowned.
2 turns.
4 turns, Owen insisted. They will be quick. I won't hide far, and you will be easy to find.
She sighed with exasperation, then covered her eyes and started to count. Owen sprinted away like a squirrel and took cover behind a tree far from the porter door. He hid in the crook where the branches forked, and he watched Mona as she counted. Over the babble of the fountain, he could not hear her. His heart raced with eagerness. He was going to make it more difficult for her to find him each time, and then slip away on the 4th turn. When she reached 50, she rose and began walking in his direction. He deliberately let his head poke up from the forked branches so she could find him, though he pretended to be incensed to have been caught so soon. Then he quickly rushed back to the fountain, calling out loudly so that she could hear his counting over the noise of the water. He spied her resting beneath a tree, her dark hair blending in with the bark, and gave her a little tickle when he found her. She squealed and scolded him before rushing off to the fountain for her next turn. A little pang of guilt threatened him. What would her punishment be for losing him? A scolding from Ratcliffe, probably. Owen's freedom was worth that much. But the little feeling of guilt still squirmed in Owen's chest. Crushing it down as best he could, he hid in another spot, lying down by a hedge where she would have difficulty seeing him from a distance. His position gave him a view of the porter door, and he found himself wondering if he would be strong enough to pull it open. What if the hinges were rusty? He banished the thought and waited to be found. It took Mona longer this time, and she complained again about the game. Owen decided he needed to try the door to see if it was too heavy. On his 3rd turn, he quickly slipped away and approached the wall with the pitted metal door. There was a locking mechanism next to the iron handle. If the door was locked, he would be stuck. He glanced over his shoulder and saw Mona sitting at the fountain's edge, her head back, her face angled toward the sun. She seemed to be enjoying herself, not counting at all. The door was made of wrought iron and had wide slats, some going up and down, others going across. Inside the gaps were decorative iron flowers, so there was no way to see through it. Owen grabbed the cold metal handle and pulled. The door swung open without a sound. He quickly peered through the gap, beneath which the forest descended at a steep decline. There was a well-worn dirt trail, marred by horseshoe prints. The opening in the wall was big enough to admit an animal, though not with a rider in the saddle. It was undeniably the secret exit Leona had described. There were no guards posted down below, and the thicket beyond the door was dense enough to hide his passage. There was no reason to wait. In his mind, he heard Leona's voice, "If you are a brave little boy, He glanced back one more time at Mona, sunbathing, her head tilted to one side. Fear painted shadows in his heart, but the thrill in his stomach chased those shadows away.